the Ozarks back on the farm.
Come on in and set a spell, neighbors. Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, Mae Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and the other in Ozarks folklore and traditions, and generally speaking, to help brighten your day. Good morning, Mae.
Good morning, Jim. Boo, it's kind of cold this morning, isn't it, Jim? Thank you, don't that beat you? Thank you so much. And good morning, friends, and how are you this fine morning? It's a nice morning, it's kind of murky looking, but everybody's sailing around, but it's cold. I'm doing pretty well now, but I am, the last few days, doing all right. But I'm the last few days also, I'm so full up of spaceships and capsules and Sputniks and whatnot that I'm about dizzy. Of course, though, it was great to listen to and actually gaze upon a human being who had orbited three times around the Earth and lived to tell the tale. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? A nice chap he is, and you can see goodness written all over him, and he's very brave and courageous. And they say he's a very good Christian, church-going man, with him and his family. You know, what would it be like to be sailing along in a space capsule and to look out your peephole of a window? I don't know how it is he does that. Maybe by reflections and mirrors. To be sailing along and look at the Earth and not be on the Earth. It makes you a little crazy just to think about it. There you are looking at it, but you're not on it. A friend suggested to me that I might make a broadcast this morning by talking about the firsts I have lived to see in my life, the first things. And goodness knows, what will one of my grandsons see in his lifetime if he lives to be a good age? It's almost appalling when you stop to consider it. Wasn't any too well last night. Didn't feel like going into it. But I will sometime. I'm going to do that. I have some data on it, very fine. But just hastily, here are some of the firsts I have seen. And of course, hundreds of you have also. Airplanes came into existence since I've been in existence, and quite a lot later after I was in existence. Charles Lindbergh, the first man to fly the ocean. Now I have seen the first man to orbit the Earth. And that isn't all. I have lived through the days of the first automobile, the first electric light, the first diesel engine, the first automatic washing machine, an electric stove, or toaster, or sweeper, or ironer, or the hundreds of things like that. I didn't, of course, live through the days of the first sewing machine, but my mother did. And she remembered what a wonderful thing it was to watch a sewing machine fly along through the cloth. She said, you can't realize how wonderful it was to them. She remembered when her parents got their first coal oil lamp. She was quite small. My mother would have been about 114 now. But she said they were scared to death of the lamp, afraid it would blow up, just wouldn't get near it. I may live to see the first man go to the moon. No doubt I will. But I think that it's all perfectly ridiculous and silly and useless, and in fact, I'm not in any sort of sympathy with any of this space stuff. You can just count me out. I don't see where it will benefit us in the least to go to the planets, which may be inhabited, every one of them. Why is it ours is inhabited and theirs are not? Theirs are more than likely inhabited. And it might bring the most fearful war on us and disaster, with a strange race of maybe warlike people, maybe, or monsters of some kind. Or they might be super intelligent and have death rays that would slaughter us the moment we landed on their planet. I do wish we could make up our minds to drop it all and make a wonderful world out of this one we have. Suits me if we could fix it up a little. But I guess that'll never be. No, we've got to tinker. We've got the bug now. You know, John Glenn said the other day he was addicted now to this flying through space. He'd like to go again. If we could only content ourselves with the world we have and work to make it better, to make a new heaven and a new earth that the Bible speaks of. My dear friend, Miss Dora Cooper of Birch Tree, often sends me beautiful little gems, and She and her husband, Jesse, are getting quite old and they're almost invalids. But she has a wonderful mind and a deep sense of values. And she sent me this little poem of thankfulness, which is right along this line. Let us be thankful for the little things. Isn't that true? The little things. Thankful that the kettle gently sings. Thankful for simple food and supper spreads. Thankful for shelter and a warm, clean bed. Let us be thankful for the little things. Thankful for friends who share our woe or mirth. Glad for the warm, sweet fragrance of the earth. For golden pools of sunshine on the floor. For love that sheds its peace around our door. For little friendly days that slip away with only meals and bed and love and play. A rocking chair and kindly firelight. Oh, for little things, let me be glad tonight. Isn't that the truth? If we could only get down out of the clouds and out of space and out of danger and venture and perhaps terrible disaster and spend our time and our billions, for that's what it costs, I begrudge every penny of mine that goes for it, trying to make this world a lovely place to live in, then I'll give it up. Maybe I've lost my yen for going thousands of miles to see 4 sunsets in one day, as John Glenn said he did, up in space. I don't care for 4 sunsets a day. And at the rate of 17,000 miles an hour, that's just a little bit too fast for me. They said it took him just 7 minutes to cross the United States from one end to the other. 7 minutes. I don't want that either. I'd rather go slower and stop over and see some of my friends and set a spell with them. Wouldn't you? Oh, my, my. What a world. Now, I want to wish a happy birthday to Mrs. Minnie Woods at Miller, Missouri, who lives with her daughter, Mrs. Elton Sanders, her only child. Miss Woods will be 78 years old this coming February the 28th. That's next Wednesday. Her daughter says that cards or calls or anything from her friends would delight her so. She loves people. Ms. Woods is, she's at Miller, you know. Ms. Woods is a native of Dade County near Everton and is well known there and gets so lonesome for her old friends. She doesn't know very many in Miller. She had a twin brother named Manny Scott who died 3 years ago. And the daughter says she misses him so much. They were always very close, singing together. Miss Sanders says they were both gifted with talent for singing and sang so beautifully together. She sent me an old song written in her own handwriting. You who are older will remember it, the battleship Maine and the cruel sinking of it, which brought on that war, our war with Spain, the Spanish War. I used to play my guitar and sing that song when I was young, but I find I've forgotten the tune. But I think it's in the marvelous books of old songs by Vance Randolph, which have words and music both. I haven't had time to look yet. Thank you so much, Miss Sanders, and all my love and best birthday wishes to you, dear Mrs. Minnie Woods. And may you live and love and be loved many more years yet. And I want to send birthday greetings to my good friend Jim Irwin at Dadeville. Day after tomorrow, I think it is. 26th, I guess it is. He'll be, I don't know, I think it's 92. You couldn't tell by looking at him, though. No, not at all. Happy birthday to you, Jim Irwin, from me and my whole family. You know, the kids all like you. Happy birthday to you, and so stick around at least till you're 100. I had a letter from Mr. J.W. Wolfe at Pierce City, which you'll be interested in. You know, I told you last Saturday about the old man down home who always wanted his coffee 100%, he said. He's always talking about, I want my coffee 100%. And we never knew what he meant. And I've always wanted to know. Well, Mr. Wolfe explained that exactly. Mr. Wolfe is in Pierce City, I think. Yeah. And why did I never think of it before? He said that during the Civil War, coffee was a mighty scarce item. So people mixed chicory bark and buckwheat and no telling what else in with it, with what little coffee they could get. So the old gent wanted all coffee. That's what he meant, 100%, and nothing added. Of course. I didn't know what he wanted, 100% water or what he wanted. Of course, that's the reason in a nutshell. I myself remember when they mixed parched corn with about one-third coffee around on the little ridge farms when things were scarce way down the country and people were poor. And long years ago, as Mr. Wolf said, coffee was as scarce as hen's teeth. And we had so much poorer way of getting it into our country, too, from Cuba and the South American regions. Don't talk about Cuba. I have to think about what is in his whiskers. Fidel Castro. Wish he'd shave them off. It doesn't concern me, though. Now I know why the old man wanted his coffee, 100%, and thanks to you, Mr. Wolf. I remember my father-in-law, Dr. McCord, telling me how scarce coffee was in the Army during the Civil War. They could hardly get it at all. And my, how they missed it. Those hard, cold nights. And many times, he said, they had to use parched corn and chicory and a lot of junk. Buckberries and heaven knows what all pounded up. Mrs. A.C. Brogan of Bentonville, Arkansas. Now, here's something I want to know. She says her son, who lives in California, is much interested in Southern cooking, especially in the old-time dishes. And she wants to know if I would know how to make Hop John. Hop John. Well, sir, I just don't know about it. Do any of you know? It wasn't Johnny Cake, I'm sure. Now, if anyone knows anything about Hop John or how to make it, will you please write to me, and then I'll write to Ms. Brogan. I know about hodgepodge. That was little dabs of leftovers, no matter what was left over from the meal you were saving it. Meat, beans, and corn, just anything. Chop it all up. And, of course, we have food grinders now, but they chopped it in a bowl. And then chop an onion with it and mix one egg in it and a little breadcrumbs and make it out in cakes and fry it. Why, my mother's made hodgepodge many times. You have no idea how good it was. My wee kids loved it. And what a savor of leftovers. A dear old neighbor of ours used to make it, too, and she'd always let us kids come over and give us a patty of hodgepodge, fried hodgepodge. Then you know about hush puppies, but the hush puppies today are nothing like they used to be. They're exactly like the hodgepodge. Only when you chop this all up, you added an egg and a great big handful of meal. Mixed that all up and fried it. And do you know how Hush Puppy got its name? We learned this in the folklore. The puppy used to hang around the back door and bark, looking wistfully in, wanting something to eat, and the woman cooking would just grab up some leftover that she could find on the table there, something no use for, a bit of meat or potato or cornbread or just anything, and throw it out to the puppy and say, Hush Puppy. So that's how it got its name, Hush Puppy. Then they got to making a cornmeal batter and frying it up and putting it around the fish platter for you to help yourself down in New Orleans and in the South. And they call that hush puppies. Well, I'll have to run now. Come over and see me. And, you know, I'll make hodgepodge. I surely will. Goodbye and God bless you. And last but not least, keep the faith, keep the faith. And happy birthday to all you who have a birthday. And I'll be seeing you next Saturday, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. The time just flies. I don't seem to have been here but 2 or 3 minutes. I see Henry looking at the clock.